Committee on Environment to order and welcome you all here. We have two representatives to work. First of all, we will call a hearing on the House Bill 2328. And I'm going to invite Representative Barnhart and Representative Ackerman to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm state representative from House District 11 and a member of this committee. I wanted to describe just a little bit how this bill came to be and then leave the details, of which there are many, for others who are more qualified to talk about them to explain. Lane County is a largely rural county, even though we have some very large population centers. And many of the people in Lane County use propane for heating and cooking. We have a number of semi-rural trailer parks that are do not have access to gas lines, natural gas lines, and a number of other residents. The alternative heating method in many of these places is wood, which has some significant pollution problems, and where I live at least, becomes very noticeable in the time when the cold weather hits and the wood stoves start. That's actually happening because of the haze and the air and the smell and so forth. What led to this bill turned out to be of enormous interest to me from a number of points of view, not the least of which was the environmental point of view, but also because a number of my constituents were finding themselves in situations where the least expensive, cleanest and most convenient fuel source to them was becoming unavailable as a result of the regulatory system that Lane County found itself in. First, I should say that the installation of fuel of propane tanks has been regulated for a long time by the state fire marshal, and permits are required, and the fire marshal has the right to do inspections. And the installation of these kinds of systems is very well understood. The basic safety requirements are very well understood, and the technology is not new. It's been around for a long time, and again, it's well understood. In the recent past, Lane County began enforcing a land use regulation requiring land use decisions to be made each time a propane tank was to be sited, which meant that tanks down to the size that would rent for $65 a year, I had to have a land use study, including a site map drawn, and a very substantial fee to be paid to the county for the land use decisions to be made in connection with siting a propane tank. Needless to say, this has been an enormous burden on consumers and on those who supply the propane tanks and the propane for them to use. The point of this bill, essentially, is to reestablish the state's primacy in the area of regulation of propane tanks. I brought the bill at the request of the industry, I think, essentially, all of the members of the local delegation are in agreement. To my knowledge, there is no regulation of this kind in any other county in Oregon.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions of our esteemed colleague? Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Help me, Representative Barnhart. Is this usurping local government?
I think, Representative, that the point of this bill is to restore the state's jurisdiction that it's had all along.
But Lane County, local government, has made a decision, and the function of this bill is to override.
Lane County has decided that siting a propane tank is a land use decision. And this bill, as I understand it, it's run through many permutations, modifies that decision that the county has made.
Thank you, Representative.
Other questions? All right, thank you. Representative Ackerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Bob Ackerman. I'm a state representative from North Eugene. I want to speak briefly this afternoon about this bill. It does repeal the authority of a county to declare the siting of a propane tank as a land use decision. I don't view that as the assertion of local control, because I think the authority to deem these decisions as land use decisions is misplaced in the first instance. In my view, the primary jurisdiction over the siting of propane tanks should continue to be vested in the Fire Marshal's office, because of their greater expertise in fire safety with respect to products such as the propane substances. I think the Dash 2 amendments, if you read them closely, gives the local governments the authority to regain this authority to site propane tanks, but not in the context of a land use decision. And the Dash 2 amendments basically provide, as I read them, that the state fire marshal can exempt counties from certain requirements, which will give them the siting authority once again. But again, it's something that has to pass through the fire marshal, which I think is the best interest of public safety. I think occasionally we try to look for what I call legislative consistency, and I don't find a lot of it in this assembly all the time, but I'd like to relate in my conclusion an example of legislative consistency. House Bill 2356 was a bill which repealed the authority of the county surveyor to make land use decisions. Somehow the statute had been construed to give that land use authority to a county surveyor. On March 22nd of this year, House Bill 2356 was passed. That authority was repealed. The vote was 60-0. This is very close to that, because the giving land use jurisdiction to the county in this particular instance, I think, was a misplaced application of local authority. It can be regained through the exemption process administered by the fire marshal's office. And I think for those reasons, you should pass this bill out with a due pass recommendation. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Representative Garrard.
Either one of our esteemed representatives, the bill is being amended. Could you explain the amendments, please?
I think I alluded to them briefly, Representative Garrard and Mr. Chair. I think what they do is provide a process by which the fire marshal can, in certain instances, give this authority back to the county. Not that they can make it a land use decision, but they can participate in the siting process of the propane tanks. And I know from your witness list this afternoon, there's probably people that would be more qualified than I to speak with great detail on those amendments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, I think others discovered as they were working on these amendments on this bill was that the issue was more complicated than I originally thought, and I would refer you to the blue tab or bill and amendments in the notebook put together by Alana Butterfield, in which she describes in some fair detail some of the ways in which the Dash 2 amendments modify the bill. The essence of them are that there are a number of situations in which it makes sense for the county to regulate the siting of propane tanks, but not tanks that are used primarily for home heating or cooking. But other things like siting a tank that primarily is used for storage or for transfer for sale, for example, and there are other examples in that document. I refer you to that, and also, again, I would second what Representative Ackerman has said. There will be others who know more about the details of that than we do.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions of the witnesses? Representative Jensen.
Thank you. With all due respect to my good colleagues, and having nothing to do with whether I intend to support or do not intend to support the bill, but if it walks like a duck, it swims like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, maybe in fact it is a duck. And no puns intended with this, given the nature of the community that you're bringing this bill to us from. But I certainly appreciate the representative's eloquent way of swimming out of the water of local control versus state control, but I still think it's a duck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, as a good representative, is well aware I'm a strong duck.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Appreciate you coming. I'd like to call up Lana Butterfield, Al Johnson, and Eric Nelson as the next witnesses. Would you like to lead up today?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield, and I'm here today representing the Northwest Propane Gas Association. With me is Eric Nelson. He is the manager of the Farrell Gas Plant in Eugene, and he's here to answer any technical questions that you might have that I can about propane. And on the other hand is our lawyer, Al Johnson, with the law firm of Johnson & Shurton, and he won't tell you this, but I will. The Eugene Register Guard called him one of the best land use attorneys in the state, and it's been our pleasure to have his counsel for almost a year now on this subject. I'm going to give the main testimony, and then Al will finish up, and I'll be happy to go over the amendments with you. Okay. The Northwest Propane Gas Association brings you this bill, and we ask you to adopt the Dash 2 amendments and vote yes on it. Traditionally, as has been described to you already, the regulation of propane tanks has been that or of propane in general, has been that the Oregon State Fire Marshal has a statute, and by that statute, they regulate the propane tank up to the first stage regulator, which is a valve on the top of the tank, and then the piping underground and the appliances and the venting inside the house are regulated through the building codes. And each of these two state agencies has local jurisdictions to which they've granted authority to run that program if they are so qualified. The system has been in place for over 50 years, and it's worked well. For over a year now, Lane County has been consistently treating the installation of almost all liquefied petroleum gas storage tanks, regardless of tank size, so even the little bitty ones if they're attached to the house, for homes and businesses as separate land use decisions. And this is serious in Oregon because our land use laws are very complex. They define land use decisions very broadly, and it's costly. There are other kinds of procedural requirements that these guys don't even know about yet. They're just getting into the thick of this. To justify its permitting process, because we ask them, why are you doing this now, Lane County raised the issue of fire safety, and they also said, we're afraid, you know, fires might happen and that might make insurance rates go up. Well, as many of you know, I've lobbied for insurance companies since 1986, and my ears perked up at that. So I called a couple of companies, because you know insurance companies will get their pound of flesh, and I asked them, you know, do you have anything in particular that you do if there is a propane tank on, you know, the home site? Do you raise your rates? Do you exclude the coverage, et cetera, et cetera? And they said, no, we treat them exactly like a natural gas heated home or an electrically heated home. So there's nothing that insurance companies do in regard to propane tanks. And in your notebook under the safety, I have letters from Safeco Insurance Company that talks about how they do not see a propane tank as a hazard. There's also in under the safety tab an interesting study that was done just recently on the effects of thermal radiation on propane tanks. There's a lot of things you can do to a propane tank before it becomes really dangerous. And the forest fires that are talked about in that study are less hot than the study parameters worked on. I'm not making much sense here, but if you look at the study results, you can see it's actually an interesting study. Lane County's permitting process has involved high fees, time-consuming plan reviews, comment and appeal periods, and processing delays, and these have deterred customers from choosing propane. We have other fuels that we compete against, and this has been difficult for my dealers. Equally important, it deters residents from converting to propane from wood or pellets, which cause a lot of environmental particulate problems down in Lane County, and under the air quality information, I've provided you with some of that information. So dual regulation and fees on the same installation from both Lane County and the fire marshal has caused confusion and conflict. Most frustrating to propane dealers, and one of the representatives referred to this, has been the county's lack of specialized knowledge of the interpretation of propane-specific codes. This is our Bible, if you will, of the propane industry. It's the Liquefied Petroleum Gas Code. And this is a national code that is used worldwide. It's important that regulators understand this. There's been a lot of confusion about how it's applied. There are dealers here who are going to talk to you about the effects of what this has been, and so I'm not going to take your time to do that because you'll hear that from them. I did want to bring out one interesting thing that has happened in Lane County. People do not want to have to deal with this regulation, and because Lane County does not regulate underground tanks, Lane County now has a whole lot of underground tanks within its borders. This is interesting because it first of all, the consumer has to buy the tank and dig the hole, have the hole dug. That's expensive. And then they put themselves, because they're the owner, in for a lifetime of maintenance. So, interesting effect. The second page of my testimony talks about unnecessary regulation overlaps and inefficiencies and how Lane County strategic plan recognizes that those things are important. It quotes the governor in terms of streamlining. And I think the key to the success of those efforts at removing unnecessary regulatory burdens is to avoid the creation of new ones. We have invited counties to work with the fire marshal and our association regarding anything they don't particularly like in how the fire marshal is regulating, and I repeat that here on the record. We're happy to work with them. Consistent regulation and knowledge of our national code by a single regulatory authority is very important to our industry throughout the state. That is really important. When you're building something and you're quoting prices and you need to, you know, have consistency in how the installation is done. That's why our entire association, not just the Lane County folks, are supporting this legislation. For half a century, responsibility for regulating the installation of propane tanks has been allocated to the state fire marshal. We believe that's where it belongs. The Dash 2 amendments clarify propane tank regulation for everyone throughout the state, and entangling what should be simple choices about fuel sources for homes and small businesses into Oregon's cumbersome land use permitting system has not been a good experiment. So we would ask you to adopt the Dash 2 amendments, which I'm happy to explain at this point, unless you have questions.
Why don't you go ahead and explain, and then we'll have questions.
Grab my paper here. Section 2.1 of the original bill is unchanged. It provides that regulation of propane tanks by the state fire marshal is not a program affecting land use. Then the Dash 2 amendment rewrites and replaces sections 2.2 and 2.3 of the original bill to explain more clearly what local governments may and may not do in regard to propane tank regulation. It rewrites Section 2.2 to provide that local governments may not regulate the siting, installation, maintenance, or removal of propane tanks already regulated by the fire marshal, except under the new subsection 3 below or through the exempt jurisdiction statute. That's ORS 480.450 sub 7. And those local jurisdictions are Eugene, Forest Grove, Gresham, Medford, Portland, Salem, Springfield, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. Then Section 2.3 provides that local governments may do the following. They may regulate siting and installation of propane tanks larger than 1,200 gallons or a group of tanks with an aggregate capacity of more than 4,000 gallons in order to protect public health and safety. They may regulate siting and installation of propane tanks in a floodplain regulated by local ordinance. This is language that we worked out with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I went over and spoke with Lane Shetterly, and you have a letter from him in your booklet. Local governments may regulate the siting and installation of propane tanks that are not an accessory to an authorized land use. So in other words, this allows local governments to regulate tanks that are in and of themselves primary uses, but homes and businesses using smaller tanks for heating, cooking, etc. would not be regulated under this section. A propane tank holding fuel for resale at a gas station or fuel depot, on the other hand, would not be an accessory use but part of the primary use. And I've given you some pictures of what those tanks look like. A local government, may prohibit the siting and installation of propane tanks of specific types or sizes within an urban growth boundary to protect public health and safety. This allows cities the ability to say that propane tanks are not allowed in the downtown area, and we do have some. And I, in putting together this amendment, I was trying to protect those cities who have those kind of local ordinances. And then finally, outside of the urban growth boundary, the local fire authority may regulate placement of propane tanks for the purposes of fire prevention. If there's a mill that's falling down outside of town and the fire marshal thinks that's not a good place for a propane tank, he can say, no, you can't have it there. The Dash 2 amendments eliminate Section 3 of the original bill, and that, along with the other section, addresses the Department of Land Conservation and Development's concerns. Page 2, we've got a renumbering there, and then page 2 of the Dash 2 amendment deletes the old Section 2 dash or sub 3 reference that was deleted earlier, and it inserts the reference to the exempt jurisdiction authority to regulate propane tanks in place of the state fire marshal. It adds the words exclusively to clarify the scope of the exemption of tank siting decisions from the definition of land use decision. So how that reads then is that a land use decision does not include a decision of local government that approves the siting, installation, maintenance, or removal of a liquid petroleum gas container regulated exclusively by the state fire marshal. And the most important part that I left out, of course, is pursuant to ORS 480.450 sub 7. That's the exempt jurisdiction statute. This means that decisions made by exempt jurisdictions are not exempted from the application of the normal tests for determining whether local government decisions are land use decisions. A local building permit decision by an exempt jurisdiction made under clear and objective standards won't be a land use decision, and one made under standards that are not clear and objective will be a land use decision if those standards are set forth in a land use code or plan policy. And finally, the Dash 2 amendments insert a new Section 4 that subjects regulations made by local fire, local jurisdiction fire authorities to the direction of the state fire marshal.
Any questions for the witness? Representative Kern.
Lana, part of your package, I believe it's your package, has a letter from a Ellen May Wilson, and she refers to the fee that Lane County was charging of $1,175 just for a permit. Is that still...
The fees that are actually in your packet and the fees that you see under that were being charged, the fees have been, and they were that high. I mean, to get a propane tank could cost you over $1,200. They are still high, although some of them have been changing recently, and we don't have anything in writing. These dealers can't agree among themselves what the fees really are. I called down to the county to try to get you something in writing, and they didn't have anything. But yes, the fees have been extremely high just to get a propane tank, and no wonder most people are walking away from making that decision.
Thank you.
Is there any retroactivity in terms of those fees that have been charged?
The retroactivity comes in this fashion. If a tank has already been set and it has been approved by the fire marshal, if it hasn't gotten a Lane County permit, then yes, it is... needs to go through that land use process, and that's our dealers will tell you about some problems with that particular aspect of this issue.
Maybe you'd like to come back after the dealers have had a chance to speak and summarize. Any other questions? Yes, staff.
Yes, I was just curious. Could Lane County get an exemption under your bill that would apply to all, if you will, of the non-urban areas of the county? Or would it be up to, like, individual fire districts or other cities in the county to get the kind of exemption you talk about in your bill?
Mr. Chair and John, the exemption that is quoted here under, where is it, ORS... 480.457, that is a process that counties have to go through, or local jurisdictions, in order to get this exempt authority. And it's not something you do lightly. It's something that the fire marshal has to agree to. The local jurisdiction has to be able to prove that they can run that state program as well as the fire marshal. So the answer, I think, is no, unless they...
I am assuming that Lane County in and of itself doesn't have any, doesn't operate in any way, shape, or form as like a fire department or a fire district in any of the rural parts of the county.
My understanding is that just Eugene and Springfield, is that correct, Eric?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Johnson, would you like to follow, and then we'll ask the dealers to...
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Al Johnson. Like I said, I'm a land use attorney and with the firm of Johnson and Sherton in Portland, Salem. Our practice is almost exclusively land use, and it's pretty much statewide. This bill addresses a problem which we come across in our practice more and more as time goes on, and it's referred to in land use circles, I guess, maybe elsewhere, as category creep. And it comes from the fact that we've got a definition of land use which is pretty all-embracing and in some ways pretty unclear. And it uses some very broad language that the Land Use Board of Appeals has described as uncertain and troubling. The result is that you get decisions that increase the scope of land use regulation and move it into new areas, not so much as a matter of conscious legislative choice as a matter of LUBA having to flip a coin and decide which it's going to be. And it's sort of a it's sort of an unpredictable, irrational, all or nothing kind of thing. If I could return respectfully to the representative's analogy to a duck, I guess what we've got here is a very fuzzy picture of some kind of bird. It looks like it's yellow, and the local staff is being asked to compare this animal that they picked up on the street with that picture and decide whether it's a duck or not. It's kind of a difficult thing. I can tell you that there's been no decision by the Lane County Board of Commissioners to ratify the staff interpretation or themselves to decide consciously that the that regulation of propane tanks is or should be a land use decision. What this bill does instead, and the reason it's so complicated actually, is this bill actually engages in a selective process deciding which propane tanks are ducts and which propane tanks are something else. And it's a difficult process. It involved a lot of consultation. As you can see, Lana's been quite successful in bringing a number of groups together. That's why we had the two representatives up here. It makes it a little bit more complicated. That's what happens when you get down and do the dirty work. So what we have as a result of this is a legislative solution that makes the process simple, where it doesn't have to be complicated, and where making it complicated would have the greatest impact. That's the basic idea. It leaves the land use process in place as to large tanks. It uses current objective standards, numerical standards, 1,200 gallons, instead of whether or not it is an auxiliary use or something else like that, as the basic cutoff. It uses definitions that relate to specific purposes for which tanks are used, and it clearly does this in a way that that reflects a series of rather difficult distinctions and choices that have been made. It also, although it's more difficult to read and explain, it is actually going to be a lot more easy for local governments, land use boards of appeals, courts, and the industry to interpret and apply. So in that respect, it's a great improvement. I'm available here to answer questions concerning the background of this. I'll simply tell you that in terms of retroactivity, this is certainly not a retroactive statute in the sense that it is changing the law to add regulation. What it's really doing is partially reinstating a legislative allocation of authority to regulate propane tanks that is embodied in state statute and has been reflected in interpretations by the Attorney General and by, I believe, the State Fire Marshal's Office ever since about 1987. So this is one more thing where we're simply trying to keep working what is working.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. Johnson? All right. Very good. Eric, would you like to present?
Mr. Chair and member of the committee, I'm here to answer questions. We got some other constituents to actually share and witness. I would like to answer any questions you have, so if you can think of anything at all, definitely ask.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Got off easy today,
I guess.
All right. I'll call on Mark Amspoker and Denise Murray and Bruce Engelman.
Shall I begin?
Please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Amspoker. I am a account representative for Suburban Propane Eugene, Oregon. I support the House Bill 2328 and the -2 amendments. The consequences of the new permit process in Lane County have been numerous. I have lost many potential customers since Lane County regulations went into effect in 2004. They are ready. The people, my customers, potential customers, are ready to go with the propane as a fuel. But then I have to tell them about the permit processes, the cost, and a minimum of 3 trips to secure a tank permit. Once they hear this, they simply tell me they will get back to me after they think about it. They see the hassle ahead and go with electricity instead. This is essentially eliminating the alternative fuel for a consumer in terms of heating choices. I've heard contractors tell people that propane is too expensive to put into their home. When I approach the contractor and ask them why, the answer is all too familiar. They really don't want to get to deal with the processes of Lane County either for a new tank permit. To avoid these regulations, customers can buy a tank and bury it in the ground, but that is very expensive. These regulations have also been applied retroactively for tanks that have already been approved by the State Fire Marshal. I think the biggest problem with this is the duplication of regulatory authority, and that it restricts people from having a choice of propane dealers. This is not fair to the consumer. They cannot simply call another propane company dealer and have them provide a tank and fuel at a reduced cost as in other communities. If they want to switch suppliers or even move to a larger tank size, they may have to get a new tank permit from Lane County, even though it is an existing system and has already been a revenue stream for Lane County. This permit could cost over $1,200 in some areas. It goes without saying that this will stop almost anybody from moving forward with propane. While I was drafting this, I got a call from a lady. Her name's Ruth. She's over 80 years old. I had met with her a couple weeks before. She wanted the propane for a heat source. Her husband had passed away, and she simply could not move the wood pellets around needed to heat her house. She opened an account with us. She ordered the appliance, signed the bid. Then when we got to the details of what was needed from her to fulfill the county obligations, she called me yesterday and said it was just too much trouble to proceed with the Lane County permitting process. While I offered to get the permit for her, she simply could not get around well enough on her property to provide me with the needed plot plans, property line, drainage fields, locations of buildings, and underground gas, any underground lines her husband may have buried. She was very frustrated. And that's typical. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? All right. Denise?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Denise Murray. I am a district manager for AmeriGas Propane in Springfield, Oregon. I would like to tell the committee about the time and some of the problems that are involved in the permitting process in Lane County. It has taken me at least 2 to 3 trips at any given time to get a permit to set a single propane tank. I spend a minimum of 2 hours at a time on the permits. It takes me longer to do the paperwork and get a permit than it actually does to have my guys go out and install a tank and run the propane line. Many, many times it will take me 4 to 5 hours. I have to drive to Florence or I have to drive to McKenzie Bridge because many of our customers are elderly, and help them with the plot plan. You know, where are your property lines? Where does your house sit? This plot plan has to be to scale. It has to show everything exactly, including water source, their septic fields, their drainage, all that good stuff. We do the same thing to set a propane tank as you would do if you wanted to build a brand new home on your property. It can take, again, like I said, up to 4 to 5 hours, and many times the customers are not capable of or can't deal with everything that is required by the county. It all takes considerable time, and we still, once we get through this process, have to get in there and actually apply for the permit. When this began, the county didn't know anything about NFPA 58. They had never heard of it. Quite frankly, they didn't know that there were any laws governing the setting of propane tanks. We have run into cases where the county has approved propane tanks to be set, where the consumer has gone in to get the permit, them not knowing the law any better than the county does, and we've had the county site tanks in locations that have been illegal according to state fire code. I've had contractors who have gotten permits at the start of the permitting process when they put the plans and everything in for a new home, had the county approve these things. We'll go out, they've poured slabs for propane tanks and everything else, and they're in the wrong place because legally we can't do that. And that creates considerable problems for us. And the contractors, home builders, are just as frustrated with this as we are. And they are turning away from propane, and they're going back to things like wood and pellets. Because of the time and the money involved when this program began, I personally had to lay an employee off because it was taking so long to get permits. And I couldn't keep everybody busy, and without being able to do that, you know, I had to let people go. It's not been good for the economic health of my business, and I would like to see our bill passed so that we can get back into the business of setting tanks instead of trying to get permits all the time. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those now.
Question from Representative Gerard.
I was just curious. Does the county charge a similar fee on any of your competitors?
As in other propane companies?
No, other heat sources.
I honestly cannot tell you that. I do not know if they charge, say, the oil companies, for instance. I don't know what they go through. I've talked to oil companies, and they have told me that when they set oil tanks, they don't have to go through this, but I do not know that for an absolute fact. But I've been told that they don't. But I honestly could not tell you that.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Make
sure I understand then. This is a specific fee just charged on propane, as far as your knowledge is
concerned. As far as my knowledge is concerned, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mine is more, my question, Mr. Chair, is not technical, but the main concern is the safety, such as fire concerns, sometimes explosion. And do you see any such danger issues when you put more tanks in Lane County area?
I don't, because the state fire marshal is already regulating that. I kind of look at it now as that we're being regulated twice. The county requires us to do one thing, the state requires us to do something else, and we were already doing the right thing, and we were doing what state law and what the National Fire Protection Association requires for us to do. The county is just requiring us to do these things again, basically. I mean, we were already doing the right thing, and we were already doing things safely, and there were already permits being gotten for, like, the plumbing, the mechanical permit, and that sort of thing. And I don't think that putting in another tank and paying the state for one permit and the county for permit for the same tank is making it any safer. It's just making it much more frustrating to do business in Lane County.
Okay. One more follow-up. To your estimation, how many more tanks will be installed in the Lane County when this bill passes?
You know, I honestly can't say for sure, but I would say with the amount of business that I personally have lost, and if you take that by four, you know, with the other companies there, I would say that maybe you'll see another 100 tanks a year, maybe 150 a year. But again, they're using them for home heating, they're using them for, you know, cooking and that sort of thing. So they're typically 120-gallon tanks, 250-gallon tanks. They're not these great big large tanks that you see, you know, like in our propane yards and that sort of thing.
Okay, one more follow-up, Mr.
Certainly.
There has been a lot of issues concerning the gas tanks, leakage of the oil is contaminated, the water and the environment and the land and whole thing. Do you think this gas will contaminate the soil or land, or this is clean?
Propane is clean. Basically, what happens with propane is if there is a leak, it dissipates in the air. It, unlike gasoline or oil, where it lays on the ground and you know, contaminates it over the years, propane is basically a clean fuel, and it will dissipate before, you know, it contaminates anything. It just basically the wind and everything will help dissipate it, and it'll be gone.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hoyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank the three of you for coming in to testify. I know we've had conversations before about this bill. Refresh my recollection in the committees. It is the fact, isn't it, that when you site a propane tank, you pay a permit fee to the state fire marshal.
We do indeed.
And the state fire marshal is responsible then and does, in fact, inspect a certain number of these installations.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and a follow-up, if I may. And the regulations that you follow, promulgated by the state fire marshal and national regulations you've spoken about, they deal with the safety issues that we've been talking about, don't they?
Absolutely. That's what they're in place for.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, please.
I'd like to talk to Representative Kim
Lim.
Lim, I'm sorry. I got terrible eyes.
That's
I'm
fine.
On your question about how many more propane tanks would be set if the bill was passed, I don't think that's the drive of the bill at all. I think the drive of the bill is to let us go back to normal business and set the normal amount of tanks that we were setting in 2002-2003. I don't think it's going to, if the bill is passed, inundate Lane County with propane tanks. It's going to leave people a choice, an alternative fuel choice, to heat their home, so they don't have to do with wood or electricity. It just gives them another choice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did you want to comment on that?
Mr.
Yes.
Representative Lim, he asked about the issues about the fire safety. The county planners that I had talked to, and I've asked them twice on several occasions, was this land use or was it for fire safety? He said it was for land use, such as where the tank was placed on septic systems or where it was at. It was indicated to me that it was not a fire marshal issue. It was land use. I asked him on those occasions whether they were concerned about the placement of the tank being a safety issue, such as fire or whatever. His reply was land use to me.
I understand. Thank you.
Each of you have multiple locations around the state. Are you aware of any other locations in other counties that have this type of activity?
As Mr. Chair, as in all places, a flood plain comes into effect. Obviously there are setbacks from flammable materials, there are setbacks from flames, spark ignition, and us three professionals, we know that. We've been doing that for several years. But I've been around quite a bit around the state, the coast. I'm served Roseburg, Eugene, Bend, Salem, on up the valley. And this is the only county jurisdiction that I've ever run into where I have to duplicate a permit process.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that brings our testimony to an end. Bruce.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Engelman. My father, Ray, started a local business 25 years ago. It's me, my father, my mother, and I have one driver. We are a small outfit. These issues with this planning is like when you ask, like, how many more tanks and stuff like that, we've figured it's probably half we've lost of tank installations. We're struggling. We run the outfit hand to mouth. That's what we do. We're a small business. We deal with small things. The installation of the tank has just made this harder, these permits and stuff like that. I have to literally do just like they do, and I got to do it. I also have to set the tanks. My workload has increased. To me, though, the important issue is the customer choice. A lot of times I can meet needs that some of the larger organizations can't. It's usually smaller. Senior citizens, smaller installations, I can get to these. However, I have to do the same process. I have to go and get the permits. If they want to switch to my service, they have to go get a permit. And most of our business, a lot of our business, is changeouts. We kind of get what's left over, and we do all right with that. We do cash business, we do our collecting, we do everything, and so we lose business too when they call up and they say, I'd like to do this, and I say, okay, this is the process, and they don't understand why we have to go the process, even though they go, and I still have to send to the state to also do the process also, so they can regulate it also. So the change-out business enables my dad, as a small business owner, to stay in business. And in my opinion, the customer is limited on his choice. If the process is too hard for whatever reason he wants to switch to me, maybe I have do better, maybe he just likes me. However it is, his choice has been enabled. That's not the right word. Anyway, he's been limited in his choice. And like I said, many of the elderly people that we have as customers, we have a lot of them. In fact, we have people elderly that live in their RVs. and they live on their kids' land in rural areas. They've had their land for years. They let their sons and their daughters have their land, so they live on it with their RVs. And literally, I'm not permitted to install a tank for an RV. And I have many customers, who are very good customers, who want to simplify their life, and that's what they do. But I'm not allowed to at this point. Okay.
All right. Any questions of any of the panel? Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming. Anyone else that had not signed up or would like to testify on this bill? Thank you. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I represent the tree fruit industry. And I was hesitating to even say anything because I'm not sure I have anything to offer here. But there was a concern that I saw when I looked at the Dash 2 amendments, and this afternoon was the first time I saw them. And I've talked to an orchardist in Hood River who uses LP gas to heat orchards for frost protection. And I just wanted to raise with the committee and make sure, and I need to talk to Ms. Butterfield about this, to make sure that the agricultural applications we may be talking about for this product that is going to be then now be potentially regulated by a county government fits in with current practices that exist. I guess I'm really saying it, I'd hate to see a new regulation be put in place on the part of the orchardists who use this product for heat. And I don't know if there's any issue here at all, but I just wanted to raise it as it might affect agricultural applications that are being affected by the amendments that are being proposed.
Okay. When you're talking agricultural application, what size tanks are we talking?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, the tanks we're talking about are this size, 1,200 and larger. The orchardist I talked to has an aggregate of about 5,000 gallons spread over a large area, which is another issue. I mean, if you have several miles between tanks, but you have four, and you had, say, a 1,000-gallon tank in five locations spread farther apart, should they be subject to the same regulation as one 1,200-gallon tank? So I just raised those issues, not knowing if I even have an issue, but I just wanted to make sure I got it on the record.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Butterfield or Ms. Johnson, would you like to comment on?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on the question, Al Johnson again. I hadn't forgotten. the question about farm activities is the relevant one. What this statute or this bill does is not to tell Lane County or any other county that any particular kind of tank over 1,200 gallons is a land use. That still remains something that's decided under the general basket clause of land use decisions. And in most cases, most counties have not chosen to put anything in their ordinances that would trigger the determination that issuing a building permit for a farm or a farm structure that had or farm activity that had tanks as part of the operation would be a land use decision for that reason, or that the installation or replacement of the tank would be one for that reason. It's only when you have language in the local code that for some reason treats that as a structure and then has some provisions in it about how it's supposed to be sited that takes effect. And it's only where you get a local jurisdiction that has a staff that wants to make sort of a harebrained interpretation of something. And so that hasn't happened around the state yet with the big tanks any more than the small ones. If that happens, that will be a problem that at this point it really hasn't occurred on farmlands and with farm installations, as far as I know. If it does, maybe we'd be back here next session with a solution of that problem. That's kind of my take on it.
Would there be a problem if, as Mr. McCulley stated, the, a lot of the agricultural locations would be highly separated, not next to a home or not in an area where people are living generally?
Not unless a county wanted to adopt regulations that, you know, that made that a problem or called it out as a problem. It is a the storage buildings for storing corn, the storage sheds, the tanks for supplying fuel and fertilizer, all those kinds of things are auxiliary uses on a farm in the same sense that a tank, you know, is with a home.
Okay. One more question.
Well, Mr. Chair, it really isn't a question. It's just that I suddenly understood what he was saying here is that we're talking about an auxiliary use rather than a primary use. And the distinction in the bill is between primary and auxiliary use. The farm question is answered, if I understand the response correctly, by saying that the propane use is auxiliary to the business of an orchardist, or in this case, rather than some primary use like selling propane.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct. If you had a farm that was serving as the depot for a farm cooperative or something like that, you would get into a more complicated question. But if the fuel is there for that farm, it's auxiliary.
All right. Thank you all very much. With that, I'll close the hearing of the House Bill 2328, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2328.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2328 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Let's take the amendment first, Representative Jensen.
I beg your pardon.
And do I hear that as
I would move the dash one amendment to House, two amendments to House Bill 2328.
Thank you. We kind of dashed right on through the dash one, went right to the dash two.
Duffy dashy duck. Dashy duck.
Yeah. All right. Representative Jensen moves the dash two amendments to the bill. Do I hear any objections? Any discussion? Clerk will call and roll.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Aye. Chair will accept a motion to move this to the floor.
As amended.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2328 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Representative Jensen has moved House Bill 2328 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections or discussion? Hearing none, clerk will call a roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Aye. House Bill 2328, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And I'm going to ask Representative Barnhart to carry this on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your pleasure. All right. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2328. I'd like to open a hearing now on House Bill
93. 93.
No, 93.
93. 93 is Thursday.
Coming up. All right. I'd like to call forward. Let me start with the. Okay. Mike Dewey, if you'll come forward. And Kristen Mitchell, I don't see her here. So maybe she'll come in.
He's out. I think they know.
Mike, why don't you lead it out and see if we can get Kristen in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Dewey, for the record, representing Waste Management. This is a little bill, a study bill that I think has done what perhaps unintended, but has done what we hoped we could do with the subject of material recovery and recycling. Let me set the stage by saying that company I represent, Waste Management, is perhaps the largest recycler in the United States, perhaps the world. Recycle America is a substantial portion of the company. Just earlier today, we supported Senate Bill 740 as a piece of legislation on the Senate side that deals with recycling of electronics, computers and TVs and the likes, and how to best do that in the state of Oregon. We as a company work very closely with Metro. They are a partner and a regulator, and we enjoy working with them, as we do as a partner, and DEQ is a regulator of ours also. And we have a very good working relationship. I will note that, at least from what I see on the sign-up sheet, Metro doesn't necessarily like this bill, but they are somewhat neutral, and DEQ is opposed to the bill. But let me talk a little bit first about the genesis of the bill, and my conclusion will be here shortly. Waste Management and other waste companies that operate in the metro region were having meetings periodically with the metro council members, and we were talking about achieving the 62% material recovery rate by 2005. And we recognized as a whole that we were probably not going to get there. And that was fine because in Oregon we are doing a superb job. And in the metro region, in terms of recycling, we are doing a wonderful job. So it wasn't a question of whether or not we're doing the right thing. It's a question of how do we get there. And I'll give you an example. Metro and the city of Portland talk about now and have a program in the city of Portland for the collection and composting of food waste. One of the dilemmas you have, though, in the commercial market in the city of Portland is that it is not franchised. You don't have franchise territories as you do in most residential markets. So if you take the Pearl District, for example, you might have on one day five trucks going up and down the road, picking up from different establishments because each company has a contract, an individual contract, or there may be five trucks, you know, every single day, but it's a different truck. And so if you put into place food composting, you might have, because you need a new truck, you may have five additional trucks on the road that weren't there before. So on the one hand, you're picking up the compost. On the other hand, you're using manpower, you're using energy, and what are those costs? So the industry is talking with the city of Portland about the viability of, for example, franchising the commercial market in Portland. Now, that's not easy necessarily to do, but nonetheless, it is something, a discussion that needs to be had. So the discussion became, as we get to the 62%, what does it cost to get that extra 4 or 5%, whatever the number is? And a number of the council members said, yeah, we need to take a look at that as we look at the recovery rates, as we look at the new items we try and recycle. And so, as a group, I thought we had put forward a piece of legislation that ultimately became my legislation, if you will, because I was the one that got it drafted, to have DEQ take a look at this. And I tried to make it as simple as possible. And obviously, there are a number of people that thought, well, it's an unfunded mandate. I understand that. A number of the communities are doing well, so perhaps we don't need to look at them. Perhaps it's just Metro's problem, so why don't they do it? But I think the bottom line is we've had enough people talking about the approaches and talking about being practical in this arena that I would say to you that we don't need a piece of legislation. And I would say that in part, and you will have Metro's testimony, that they are now putting into place a number of the the things that we had kind of asked for informally in our various work groups. So they're doing a cost-benefit analysis, and Mr. Hoagland will speak to that. And I think that will benefit the state as we go through this. I think it will benefit DEQ. So if this bill does not move forward, I'm not disappointed, because I do think it has fulfilled an objective, and that is to have a dialogue. There may be better ways to do things in the state of Oregon. But I want to make it very clear that the company I represent is committed to recycling. It's an important ethic of this company. And they do that every single day, and they're committed now to electronic recycling in the state of Oregon. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I will be quiet. If you have any questions, or if you'd like to hear first from Ms. Mitchell, I'd be happy to have her do that.
Can we hear from you, Kristen?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kristen Mitchell with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. Our members are across the state and include waste management, as well as a lot of very small locally owned companies. So we have a broad group of members with a number of issues. Our board met earlier in March to talk specifically about this bill and had quite an interesting conversation about it. I thought it was a good discussion from a statewide level versus more of maybe a metropolitan-based level, and came to the conclusion that they would be supportive of the concept of looking at where we are in a rate recovery process, because we have discussions all the time about, is this the right track? Are we counting just for counting's sake, or is this meaningful, or are there better ways to do it? And we have those conversations with the DEQ frequently, and we're having a conversation like that currently. So, and we work very well with the department as well. They're our regulator, but they're also somebody that we can work on these types of ideas with. So while we'd be supportive of the concept of discussing what's happening with the rate recovery process, there were some concerns as well from our board. One of those was that if this were to move forward, they'd prefer that the legislation be narrowed to a discussion of those waste sheds that haven't met their 2005 goals. A number of waste sheds have already met those goals, even though we aren't even done with the year 2005. And in those communities, they're happy with the programs they have in place and don't necessarily want to go back to the table to talk about how they could or might be doing things differently. And in addition to that, the SWAC that already exists at the Department of Environmental Quality, they feel like that would be a perfect work group for this type of discussion. We already have broad representation in that work group that could look at most of these issues. The other thing they weren't sure about was what kind of a fiscal impact there may be to the department, and until they knew what that might be, that was one of the other reasons they said, you know, we're okay with the concept, but we'd need to see either some amendments and what the final result would be. So that's how our board viewed this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions of the witnesses? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for your attention.
I think I'll call Michael Hoagland up next.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Mike Hoagland. I'm the director of solid waste and recycling at Metro. It's good to see those of you that made it up again, to those of you that made it up to Oregon City a couple of months ago when the weather was warm and toured Metro South has waste transfer station and latex paint building. So good to see you again. Just for the record, Metro is a regional government for the Portland area, and one of our responsibilities is overseeing disposal and recycling in the Metro area, and we're also responsible for a waste reduction plan that has to show how we'll meet our state goal for recovery and recycling. First of all, Metro considers it reasonable to evaluate the Metro region's material recovery goals of 62% for 2005 and 64% for 2009. However, Metro is neutral on the bill, and I'll try to explain why in my testimony. The latest recovery figures from DEQ places the 2003 Metro recovery rate at 57%. So we're making progress. That's 3% better than 2002. But we do estimate that we think we might fall short by the end of this year. And we await the 2004 number, which we won't know about until about September, October of this year. Our analysis also shows we are one of the top, if not the top region in the country, in the amount of waste that we, and the percent of waste that we recover. It's usually us or San Francisco Bay Area that has the highest recovery rate. Beyond that, Metro is currently in the process of updating our own solid waste management plan, and as part of that update, the Metro Council has directed Metro's review of the region's recovery goals. Metro will be working with stakeholders, local governments, the solid waste and recycling industry, and the public as part of our review. We plan to focus on the costs and benefits of achieving the goal and attempt to balance the economic and environmental objectives contained within the current statute for recovery. We will also examine other measures and perhaps goals for waste reduction. DEQ is a partner in the plan update and will be an integral partner in our review of our recovery goals over the next 12 months. We anticipate finishing our work on the recovery goals later this year or in early 2006. At that time, we may request that DEQ initiate a process that will revise or modify our goal. They may be higher, lower, or unchanged as a result of our analysis. In addition, new measures may be added that examine waste on a per-person basis or better measure toxicity of waste, for example. Also, we hope to be able to better quantify environmental trade-offs related to energy or greenhouse gas emissions related to recycling programs. Upon completion of our work, Metro will want to report the results of our analysis either to this committee or the legislature in general. We want to come back and let it be known as to what the results of our study are. And we want to know, let you know whether it's economic or environmentally beneficial to achieve the state's recovery goals as they stand. And hopefully we'll be able to offer any lessons learned from our own experiences in trying to maximize recovery in the metro region and offer those experiences to the rest of the state, those that are appropriate. In sum, Metro is neutral on House Bill 2592. We are already doing the work envisioned in the proposed legislation, and we want to further partner with the state through DEQ on our effort. However, if a review of the goal, recovery goal is necessary from a statewide perspective, we would want to participate in such a review and would welcome the perspective and assistance statewide committee can offer. In closing, we also would recommend that any statewide effort be fully funded by the legislature. That's in regard to DEQ. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Wonder if, yes, I was going to ask if our duck keeper was going to check on the mandates. Representative Jensen.
And this is wasn't quite the forum, but it might be, yeah, that we would. But I do have several questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman. First of all, did I understand you right to when you say that we lead the nation in recovery, recycling?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, yes.
And what amounts? We're talking of 57% or something at the present time on our recycling amounts. What amounts do some of our competitor states, do we have any information on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that's a good question, and it's a little bit difficult to compare states and metropolitan areas because what is counted in some areas isn't necessarily counted in Oregon. For example, we don't include any tires that are recycled, auto fluff, things that are used for alternative daily cover at landfills, and auto bodies are not included in our recovery rate. I saw somewhere where one southern state, and I won't mention the name, had about a 2% recovery rate. And I'm thinking you could throw your lawn clippings over the fence and get a 2% recovery rate. So I wasn't sure what they were including in their rate. But in our area, it's about 1.3 to 1.4 million tons a year are recycled or recovered. And typically, each household has about 0.75 tons of waste generated per year. So you can do the math with other metropolitan areas. If they're producing the same amount of waste as Oregonians, then their tonnage is along those lines.
And one last question, if I could, Mr. Chair. What do we have for costs on this? Do you have any estimates? Any figures on the costs for us to recover this 57%?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the categories of recovery are broken into, there's a number of types of recovery, and probably source separated, which means it's separated at the source, and that includes primarily your things like glass and paper that you commingle at the curbside. So glass is in one pile and paper and other fibers are in another pile. Or construction demolition debris that is piled into wood or metal and those sorts of things. Those generally are commodity related in their costs. Albeit on the residential side, there is a portion of your bill, your household garbage bill does go to subsidize some of the recycling, the collection and hauling, but then it goes to into the commodity markets where the recyclers make money on that. And generally, it's the recovery that we do for recycling is within about 10% of disposal. That's the model that was used to come up with the recycling rates in the first place. What they did was they compared what's the cost of recycling versus what's the cost of disposal, and said because of the environmental benefits of greenhouse gas emissions and energy consumption and preservation of natural resources, the decision was made from a policy level that it would be there's a premium put on recycling, and it was at about 10%. So I don't have the exact cost with me, but that's how the goal was created.
If I could clarify, Mr. Chair. So while you don't have maybe an exact dollar, it would be fair to say that in terms of, to put it in price in terms of percentage, that there is then a 10% premium that is added to the recycling, and we've made a policy decision to spend that 10% more for recycling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that's true. Also in the metro area, though, products that are recycled, there's an avoidance of the disposal charge. So that's all calculated into the formula as well. So
yeah, and the 10% more than the disposal, and the disposal charge would be included in the disposal of the material?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, yes, that would be it. And then if I may add, that's part of the dilemma that we're trying to look at now. We're developing two models. We're updating our cost-benefit model, and then we're doing an alternatives analysis model on top of that, which will guide us in our analysis of recycling and recovery in the metro area. So you can look at, for example, Mr. Dewey mentioned food waste recovery. There are costs associated with that, and he alluded to some of those with a new truck. There's a different disposal fee for that, and so we would do an economic pro forma on that program and then lay out the environmental benefits of that program, and then be able to say, how far should we pursue that particular program? And we're going to validate those models based on existing programs of recover and recycling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little editorializing, if I can, as to where I'm going and what I'm looking for in this. And I guess basically that there are no free lunches. That laudable as it is in the recycling, we are spending money to do it. And for us to appreciate that as we spend the money to do it, since to the best of my knowledge, we have a finite, I don't know what that amount is, but a finite amount of money, that means that something is being taken from somewhere else in order for us to be involved in this. And I would defend recycling, but it needs to be done on the basis of a recognition that it is a cost to us at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Maybe as Chairman of Water, we should look at the savings that we may have in the aquifers down line as we do recycle more of this and keep it out of the landfills. But I appreciate the point that it does cost money.
If that would be true, if we, and I'd certainly be anxious to look at that if there was any threat to the landfills. But of course, in the last decade,
10 years,
all of the small landfills around the state and the one in my local community mm-hmm. was closed mm-hmm. because of the concern and fear of water seepage water, you know, getting unchecked into the river, the Umatilla River in my case, and the efforts have been made with the larger landfills that we're now using where that is at least not the same type of chemical threat.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Burr.
I was just going to tell Representative Jensen he already has nuclear waste in the ground, so it doesn't make any difference.
That, of course, is true, Representative, but in addition to which, if the nuclear waste doesn't get you, we've got sarin in the air that will help.
Representative Lim, bring this back to a serious note if you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, this only waste management advisory committee, and when they are doing the statewide study, do they include the bottle bills, which is more than 30 years old, looking at the bottle recovery also, or these bottles, the containers are excluded from this study?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I do want to note that there are representatives of Association Oregon Recyclers is here as well and may be able to answer some of these questions a little better than me. But I do know that it's commodity-based when they do the study. So it's glass and then what's recovered through the bottle bill, and then there are other types of glass that are collected through other methods. But the statewide analysis of the recovery rate does include the glass and the bottle bill recovery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mike. Now we have three very upbeat, positive gentlemen that evidently have turned negative. So I'll call Randy. Excuse me, I'll call Bob Danko and Alex Kyler and Matt Blevins to come and testify. Why don't you lead out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'd just like to take a second to explain why we're opposed to this bill. And, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm surprised that these two other gentlemen are here with me, but it gives me a little comfort. We at DEQ are very careful when we oppose bills. We don't do it very often, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we've opposed any this session, actually, at this point. But so we don't do this. We have
patience.
We consider the recycling laws a major success story for this state. In 1991, the legislature passed a comprehensive recycling law. Almost all stakeholders, all interests were involved. It passed unanimously out of this body. It set a goal of recycling or recovery. Recovery is actually a little broader term than recycling, but it set the goal as 50% for the year 2000. This is 1991. Well, when we got the year 2000, we realized that we set the goal maybe a little bit too high or a little bit too soon. And we also, in 1991, set what we call local waste shed rates. A waste shed is actually geographically, it's a county boundary, but the term waste shed is there, so it's just not the county's responsibility to get to their rate because cities are involved and so on. So the term waste shed was coined. What we didn't do in 1991 was make the local rates add up to the statewide goal. So when we got to the year 2000, almost all the waste sheds, all the counties, met their rates, but we didn't meet the 50% goal. So the legislature came back in 2001, and again, on a team approach and a consensus basis, modified the recycling law and said, let's set the 50% goal, let's keep that goal, let's not compromise that goal, but let's set it out there at 2009. And let's set an interim goal for 2005 of 45%. Let's spread this out a little bit and take our time and let's see if we can get there. But what the legislature also did in 2001 is it established what I call the wasteshed rates or the local rates in a way that you could get to this 45% and 50% goals. And that's what wasn't done in 1991. So what has happened since 2001? Because the data lags, we look at a whole year of data after the year is completed. With the most recent numbers we have are from 2003. Well, lo and behold, we've already passed on a statewide basis the 45% 2005 goal. We passed it 2 years early. And we're now statewide, we're about 47%. That's a major success story. At the local level, 2003 data, half of the wasteheads, geographically half of the counties, have already met their 2005 goal. So, again, a major success story for us. And the legislature in 2001 set up what I'd call a friendly process to address a local waste shed if it doesn't make its 2005 goal. And really, it's not an enforcement thing. It's a requirement to review what they've done so far, what their policies and programs are, and ask us for help if needed and see what we can do better to see if we can get to these local rates. And it's not an enforcement thing. So, bottom line for us, this is a success story. We're doing well. We're providing technical assistance to a lot of the rural cities and counties. We're trying to, basically just do better and keep the momentum going. So everything's fine, and along comes this bill. And, we are forced, when it says, a possible work session, we are forced to do a very formal fiscal and work with legislative fiscal office and so on. And in looking at the bill, there's words like total cost and words like most effective means. And if this bill were to move forward, we would have to do that for each county, each waste shed. We would have to go in on a case-by-case basis to do a detailed study, detailed analysis, determine what it will cost to get their 2005 and 2009 rates, and then we'd have to figure out what would be the most effective means, waste shed by waste shed by waste shed. And we step back and said, that's not what we want to do. I don't think it's necessary, and we're better off just providing the assistance where needed to see if we can get to our numbers. Well, also we learned that Metro, the biggest player, and when we talk waste sheds, the three counties in the Portland area are considered one waste shed, the Metro waste shed. And we knew that Metro was already doing basically what this bill was talking about doing. So Metro, which is much more capable than us, is doing really what the bill set out to do, and I'm comfortable where the rest of the state is and how we're helping the rest of the state meet their rates. So, such our opposition.
All right. Thank you much. Questions? Thank you. Alex?
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I'm Alex Kyler with the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I'm the chair of this trade association. We represent almost 300 members from across the state, and our members are involved in some collection of material, but mostly processing of material and regulating different aspects of collection, as well as a variety of individual members who have an interest in the issue. I've handed out some facts about some of the different savings that we feel the recycling efforts have led to in terms of conservation of water, limiting air pollution, some of what we call the upstream effects of recycling. And I'd also note that we speak a little bit to the commodity value of recyclables collected and processed in the state, reaching almost $180 million every year in terms of value. So we see the people who are involved with the Association of Oregon Recyclers, we're involved with adding value to materials previously considered waste. We don't see landfills as a very thoughtful and forward-thinking solution to how to handle resources, and instead we do see those materials as resources. Early on in my career, I met a man who was speaking, and he talked about landfills representing a fortune squandered, and those words have rung true with me for years and years, and what we are trying to do is continually figure out how to add value to those materials. I would state in the opposition to this bill that certainly that first ton of material that you decide to capture and go after and consider a resource instead of waste is going to cost you more than the millionth ton that you go after. But these are the kinds of issues that we look at, especially when we think about things like food waste. Food waste, traditionally considered garbage. Let's just get rid of it. Well, as more and more people are getting effective at composting, as we're realizing some of the effects that landfills might have on aquifers and surface waters and our atmosphere, we think that maybe turning food waste into a soil product that can be used locally to avoid more pesticide and herbicide use is a good thing. But yes, that first ton is going to cost us more than the millionth ton collected. And so I'd best point to the fact that recycling is a dynamic process, and I'm not sure we can pin down the costs on tomorrow are going to be the same as the costs that we see in a year or 2 years. And our industry is proud of the fact that we've brought the costs of recycling down in many communities. It is a local issue. The collection costs are incorporated into rate-setting methodologies. There are either solid waste advisory committees on a local level or citizen involvement committees. So there's an awful lot of oversight already in terms of looking at costs of programs. But these goals have helped move this effort along, and goals are a very important part of what we do. And I wanted to point out that there are several communities across the country now that have adopted even more rigorous goals than what we have. This is a kind of an international effort that started, but City of Toronto in Canada now has a zero waste goal. City of San Francisco has a zero waste goal. City of Berkeley just adopted a zero waste goal. And these are very ambitious goals, but they do make people think about garbage in a much different way. And while we don't have a zero waste goal in Oregon or any communities that I'm aware of yet, it is a way to start to view things in a much different way and to point to things like how do you make materials smarter so that they can be recycled at the end of their life, so that you're thinking about what the ultimate disposal and end of life is for a particular product. I wanted to point out in a recent magazine that I get called the Sustainable Industries Journal, there's an article about Fort Lewis up in Washington, and they have a very active sustainability project up there, and they have a goal of zero net waste, and they describe their goals as big, hairy, audacious goals. And so even the U.S. military has got goal setting in terms of recycling and very active at that. This is an industry, as I said, that is, we are a trade association. Our members report to the DEQ for material recovery, this is part of the DEQ's material recovery report. There's almost 500 private firms that report recycling numbers to the state of Oregon. That's an awful lot of economic diversity that recycling has led to. And we've got 35 different waste sheds that are active in the state and companies from all over the state working on this effort. We are a very important part of the future, and we're looking forward to managing resources effectively into the future. And the goal setting really does help us. Thank you for your time today.
When you say there are 500 reports, those are the reports that Mr. Danko would like to avoid having to review?
Mr. Chair, thank goodness I'm not the one who reviews them.
Okay.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I'm here today just to put on the record our concern about the bill. We have three major flaws that we sort of see in the bill that I just wanted to outline quickly. One, we feel like the bill duplicates work that was done a few years ago by the Waste Policy Leadership Group, which was a task force put together by DEQ that reviewed this and related questions. The group produced a number of recommendations, and only a set of those have been enacted. We think that it would make a lot more sense for those recommendations to be reviewed and then be enacted by this legislature. Secondly, we feel like the bill mistakenly takes too narrow a focus on recovery goals, specifically looking at recycling rates. We feel like, however, Oregon's major waste-related challenges are broader than that, including the total waste generation that's been going up faster than recycling rates. Many toxic products are contaminating the waste stream in our environment, and a great deal of energy is being wasted because energy-intensive products are being thrown away. And three, the bill requires an estimate of the cost of meeting Oregon's recycling goals, but does not direct any of the study of the benefits of meeting those goals. We continue to feel like recycling programs can create jobs and economic development opportunities, as well as reducing waste and disposal costs. And so we would think that any evaluation of cost must also look at those benefits and weigh those in terms of making any kind of evaluation. So we want to raise those concerns. We're happy to work with the sponsors on this to try to put together a package that works for everybody, and we hope to work with the committee on that. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none. Appreciate your coming.
One question.
Thank you. So if this bill, House Bill 2592, passes, even though you're opposing it, I know, and how much will it cost to do this study statewide? Any idea?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, we had to make some assumptions, you know, but after we got through the assumptions and talking about doing the analysis in each of the 35 waste sheds, each of the counties around the state, we came to a cost that exceeded
$200,000. $200,000, okay. Follow up. I understand this gentleman from my left, already you have studied, have done already some of those issues, and that the maybe if it's the redundant, same, almost the same study, why it cost that much money? Because you have already data and study already been there.
Chair Anderson, Representative Lim, I can't speak to why it would be redundant or the cost there. My assumption would be, and again, DEQ could speak to this, is that they're being asked to, again, do the assessment again, and so they're not going to just probably repackage those results again, although we think, again, the results of that study are relevant to the question that's being asked here.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2592. We have 2 minutes left. I was wondering if some of the recyclers would like to talk to us for a few days or weeks on the bottle bill. We are adjourned.